Direct from Fort Meade, Maryland, this is DinFos Live.
Hello and welcome to this, our third anniversary episode of DinFos Live. I'm Major David J. Murphy, an instructor and your host for today's program. And as I said, this episode represents the beginning of our third year on the air, presenting important topics related to the public affairs career field. On this month's episode, we'll be talking all about DinFos's visual documentation course and the importance of combat camera as an information force. Joining us to help understand these topics are two DinFos instructors, Sergeant First Class Charles Propes. Welcome to the program.
What's going on?
Please have a seat. And Mr. Drew Pendracki. Welcome.
Thank you, sir.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, before we get on with the questions, I, of course, have to remind our audience that if they'd like to ask a question of our guests, so please leave that in the chat or the comments down below, and we might just read them on the air. We should also take a moment to acknowledge that we're all wearing denim today in honor of Denim Day, a day in which we take time out to support the survivors of sexual assault and to educate ourselves and others about all forms of sexual violence. Find out more about Denim Day by visiting denimday.org. All right, let's get on with the questions, shall we? First, can you please tell us about yourselves and your career?
My name is Sergeant First Class Charles Propst. I'm a combat cameraman, or when I enlisted, it was a visual documentation production specialist. I've been in almost 18 years. I've been doing this my entire military career. I deployed to Iraq in 2008, so I did a lot of combat missions during that deployment. And I've done everything from operations to training out at the National Training Center in California, and shot photo and video my entire career. So.
Wow, amazing.
I'm Drew Pendracki. I recently retired from the Marine Corps back in 2022 as a master sergeant. I started out my career as a combat photographer back in 2002, and been three tours in Iraq, 2004, 2005 to 2006, and 2007 to 2008. I did one deployment with 26 MEW, and then finished out my career at the Pentagon. So I've been ComCam VI my entire career, 20
awesome.
Plus years.
That's great. Well, why don't we start first by establishing an understanding of what combat camera is all about, and why do we differentiate it from typical standard public affairs?
Yeah, so combat cameras have been around, you know, since cameras were, invented, been in all the wars. And I think that's one of the main missions of combat camera is the historical documentation. So we use VI in a sense that we want someone on the ground to be there documenting what's going on and what's happening. And that could be for a lot of different reasons, whether it be to be pushed out to the public or for the commanders there on the ground, or historical documentation. Some of the photos and videos that we take, you know, end up going all the way to the chief of staff, to the president, that type of thing. So the importance of our photography is crucial.
Absolutely. Combat camera individuals are the eyes and ears of their commander. So whatever, their commander is supporting whatever mission, they need to be able to get imagery that supports the commander's intent. To do that, you got to have somebody that is trained in it. You can't just be given a camera to anyone and expecting them to come back with imagery that hits the mark. So we have a whole career field for it, as well we should, because you don't need to be given a camera to somebody whose main job is to put rounds down range or to operate something else. That's where we come in.
So let's go into a little more detail in terms of the specific objectives of a combat camera operator versus more of a conventional public affairs professional. What are the specific objectives of those two career fields?
So there is a little bit of overlap, right? So we do have very similar objectives, mm-hmm. but there is a clear difference in combat camera's mission and what we're out there and required to do. So I believe combat cameramen focus more on the visual side of it and obtaining that imagery. And as public affairs, you know, their main mission is more on the route of telling stories, writing stories and articles. So that's where we focus. And the people, 7 years ago, DinFos moved to a Mass Communications Foundation course. So all VI comes into DINFOS and takes the same basic course to get, you know, all the elements. But we have a follow-on course, VizDoc, where we focus more on the training aspect of getting them out there and being in an uncontrolled environment and taking photo and video.
Absolutely. And also, too, Combat Camera's primary focus is for that commander, so internal communication, with a byproduct being things can be released to the public. Whereas public affairs primary, it's getting information out there to the public in a timely manner with a secondary effect of, okay, now that imagery can also be used as lateral, you know, communication between commanders and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Can you elaborate on the specific training and requirements for our combat camera operators? What do they specifically need to be able to do?
So specific training, you know, can go both on the side of equipment and things of that nature. In VizDoc, we focus on training them on how to get document, like, in a true uncontrolled sense. Mm-hmm. So to an extent, we put them in scenarios that they're not familiar with, and we have, they have no control, and they are put under the gun, under the pressure to try and document and produce imagery and be under that constraint.
Absolutely. When we put them through these exercises, we have a operations order that we read them, mm-hmm. and we try and introduce that to them, you know, in our course, so that way as they get out to the fleet and field, they're a little bit more familiar with, okay, I'm attending this, you know, operations order or patrol brief or whatever it may be. And they can kind of pay attention to it and figure out, okay, here's the parts I need to pick out that pertain to me and my mission. And maybe at that point it's not brought up and they have to raise their hand and say, hey, excuse me, what about this? Or I'm here for this. So yeah, that's what we hit on.
Yeah, I know when I was a first combat camera, we were focused on not only training the camera side of the career field, right? Making sure that our members were extremely proficient with how to shoot imagery, but also on the military side. So proficiency with their weapon on a regular basis, skills with close quarters combat and things like that. So it's a different set of skills that are trained on a regular basis for sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So specifically, how do combat camera operators specifically maintain their professionalism and especially their accuracy when they're shooting things like that are of a sensitive nature or perhaps are classified?
Yeah, so, you know, we have doctrine and regulation that helps govern things like classification and clearances and things of that nature. So, you know, our role as visual information is to capture everything. So we're focused on getting that imagery, and then later on will come, you know, someone who authorizes it to be released to the public or if it's for a certain commander. So being able to know your job and be able to pitch that to who, you know, someone that may be like, hey, don't take pictures of this. Well, it's my job to be out here taking pictures. It's hard to voice, but, you know, elevator pitch.
Yeah, the elevator pitch, absolutely. They also, one of the things we teach in our class, we hit on a little bit more, is that DoD I-5040.02, because that governs all VI operations within the DoD. So it's literally the backbone of what we all do.
Right.
And we introduce that to them. Good knowledge for them to know when they're going out there. You know, why are you out here? Okay, what says you need to be out here? Well, if you go back to this document, this is our mission and this is what we do, and I'm here as a part of that mission. Right. And then each of the services have their own orders as well that govern public affairs, combat camera, or just VI stuff.
Yeah, I can tell you specifically from, you know, like the first combat camera side, and of course I'm sure it applies to all the services, is that, you know, if our operators are photographing something as of a classified nature, that memory card specifically gets locked away in a secure area, and that's now the classified memory card, right? Yeah. So again, we're getting a little to the nitty details, but I think it's important that those who rely on us for imagery, those operators out there, understand that we take the security of the image very seriously.
Absolutely.
So since we're talking a little bit about cameras, let's get into technology, right? What are some of the technological advancements that have really helped our combat camera operators able to do their job and do it very efficiently?
So, you know, technology is always getting better. We see that, and once it hits the Army, hits the Marines, it's good to get your hands on new equipment that's going to help us do our job better. So, you know, when you go back and look at things that have came out and made our job better, you think of like GoPros, when GoPros mm-hmm. came out, like that was amazing to be able to throw a camera on something and get that perspective. And now I think, you know, making that transition from DSLR to mirrorless cameras, just giving us higher quality imagery and video and the ability to do our jobs in a way that, you know, is producing, you know, industry standard video and photo.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest technological advance though was going digital. Was getting rid of the film.
From
film to digital. That was just a pain in the butt. We used to have to burn CDs to transfer imagery or send it back to the FOB. I know I had to do that, burn a CD of my video and put it in a inside out MRE container and write my sergeant's name on it and send it back hoping it gets to them. Thankfully it did. I checked on it. But that along with like the internet, email. Now we have systems like the BGAN, Palm system that you can, you know, they can, that are man portable, and our service members can take them out there with them. They can, you know, gather the imagery that they need and then turn right around and send it back to their supervisor, send it back to that commander or their staff or wherever it needs to go. So we have, I think, as close to real time as we can get right now, feasibly and fiscally. I think that's as close as we can get.
Absolutely. I mean, the capability and ability to transmit imagery from the field almost instantaneously back to a point of contact or a center or somewhere where it's trying to get is remarkable. It's light years ahead of where I remember being, and you know, you're inside your hooch on your cot trying to, you know, download and transmit imagery, and it's just, you know, it can be achingly so. And I think technology is also a good piece to highlight the fact that, you know, cameras, right, are continually advancing and increasing in their megapixel range, but it's not so much the amount of megapixels, it's the amount of ability to transmit those megapixels quickly, right? Because that time is of the essence, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Talk to me about some of the ethical considerations that govern the use of visual documentation products.
So same thing, you know, we have, you know, regulations and things that we focus on in the class. And also, you know, all the services, we're all in the military, right? So we live by core values, integrity, that type of stuff. So we just tell our students that there are certain things that, you know, you're not supposed to do, not take photos of. And we relate to them that, you know, at least in combat camera, we're not in the means of like changing an image or doctoring something to make a story a certain way, right? We're more focused on taking a photo, taking video in camera the way it is and how it happened, and being able to let your imagery speak for itself in that fashion.
Absolutely. And then the DODI 5040. Yeah. That has a whole part in there with talking about ethics and unauthorized manipulations of imagery, or say, hey, if you do have to manipulate the image, such as, and I'm sure we've all done it, accidentally found ourselves in an area where they did not sanitize it, even though they told us they did, and now we got to go back, like badges or something like that, and we got to go back, we got to put, you know, blur it or do something to it. But even, you know, back to the DODI and then the DOD style guide, you know, it says in there, hey, if you do any sort of manipulation, you have to disclose what you did, because you have to be completely honest about that image. Here's the image, here's it, it's as truthful as you can get, and here's what I had to do to it because of OPSEC or whatever it may be.
Right, so they're following the same basic rules and regs that guideline and dictate every public affairs professional what they do and cannot do in the field with regard to imagery. So when we're talking about combat camera, it's not always just one person, right? Sometimes they send people out in teams to support an effort. So you can talk to me about what makes up a combat camera team, how we send those out to different areas, and what do they do when they get to those joint operations? How are they interacting with agencies that might want to utilize their services?
Yeah, so it's going to vary by service. I think it is very possible for you to either be alone by yourself or in a small team, you know, photo, video, or couple. But the big thing is being able to attach to a joint environment, right? So as a combat camera team, you could be supporting any kind of service, Navy, Army, Marines, and any type of unit. I've been attached to artillery units and infantry units, striker brigades. Being able to go into that environment, and we talked about the elevator pitch, right? Being able to convey to them what your capabilities as a combat cameraman are and show them like, hey, this is what I can provide your commander. These are the type of images that I can give you. and being able to do that confidently enough and back it up and do your job. Mm-hmm. So,
certainly. And then I think you alluded to it at the beginning of your mm-hmm. answer, the makeup of the teams. You know, you could have, we try to as much as possible, photo, video. It's mm-hmm. just easier to get imagery when you have to focus on one or the other. However, we train, and we do, we have hybrid students in our course that do both, and they do it very, very well. You know, there may be times when one single person has to do both, right. but we try as much as possible. I know, at least in my career, I tried to send out teams, but it also depends on the mission. Mission dictates.
Right.
I know back in 2011, when you had the Fukushima incident, we were told at first, like, hey, we need a photo video team to go in the next 24 hours. And then 30 minutes later, now we need two more people. Now we need four more people. And before I knew it, within 24 hours, it was me and about 10 or 12 other Marines on mainland Japan supporting that.
Yeah.
But that was a much larger scale operation.
Absolutely. You know, of course, you mentioned different operations, and of course, no job is without its obstacles, right? So how do combat camera operators commonly overcome these obstacles that they might face both, you know, in the field and during operations?
I think the biggest challenge for them is getting to a unit and having to repair any relationship that might have been damaged from sure. somebody not doing their job appropriately. But really, it's just, I think the next one after that would be the elevator pitch, getting them to realize, hey, here's who I am, this is what I can do for you, this is how I'm going to do it. And being able to say that intelligently to that commander, because they might have to, you know, talk to a commander or their staff or senior enlisted, and letting them know, educating them on, this is what I can do, and then going out there and doing it well. And basically not just doing it well for themselves, but they're also helping out whoever follows them in their footsteps 6 months down the road, a week down the road that attaches to them, and they could say, oh, you know, oh, you're with Combat Camera? Hey, I knew Sergeant First Class Probst. He was awesome. Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge.
I think for me, you know, and we tell our students this all the time, it's really important to be ready, mm-hmm. right? We talk about deployment readiness and all that, but really mentally and physically being ready to support the mission, because even when you're in a deployed environment or in an operation, you got to be able to grab your camera and go and be focused on what you got to do to do that. And it's really juggling a lot of stuff, right? So we have a lot of missions that overlap. So, you know, we have to focus on what the commander wants. We have to focus on capturing, you know, this amazing imagery that we want to push out. We may be working on a project, but you're collecting all of that imagery at the same time. So being able to focus and control all that at the same time and being able to do your job at a high level.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we talked a little about, you know, what the combat camera operator does when they get back to their hooch or get back to their mm-hmm. office and deal with their imagery. So talk to me about specifically the post-production considerations and editing requirements that are specific to our combat camera and visual documentation specialists.
So we focus a lot in VizDoc on the limiting the amount of post-production that we do. So we teach them to get stuff in camera. So, you know, like zoom in with your feet and less photo and video editing, because our job in a sense is more important to push out imagery in a fast and quick manner. So we don't want you to come back from a mission and spend, you know, 2 days editing a photo or 2 days editing a video piece together. It's more about producing short cuts or a stringer and a short amount of photos and being able to push that out to your commander or to DVIDs mm-hmm. and get it out to the public as quickly as possible. And the benefit is that timeliness.
Yes, the timeliness is absolutely key with that. And we do. We focus on, hey, you guys need to get it in camera as much as possible. That's going to reduce your editing time. And it just makes things easier because, you know, when you get back from a mission, depending on how long it is,
yeah.
you know, you're tired, you're hungry, you want to shower, imagery comes first. That's the first thing you got to do. You get back, hey, everybody else, you know, all the grunts you were with, they just, you know, they got released and they're all going to chow. Guess what? You need to finish your imagery. And they're, by teaching them to get it in camera, I think we're helping them out for those things where they don't have to spend as much time. Because who knows when the next mission's going to come up, too.
Yeah.
You could sit there and think, oh, I got the rest of the evening for this. Psych. Yeah. You know, hey, 3 hours, we need you to go here.
Pretty much.
Back on mission, yeah.
Yeah, I know, like in First Combat Camera, we trained to an hour standard when it came to, you know, you're back at the home unit. As soon as you're able to download, out process, get your selects, get your B-roll stringer together in that hour timeline, because it is so crucial to get imagery to leaders, and timeliness is very important, right? Time is of the essence at all times. So that was, you know, typically what we trained towards. Talk to me about some of the specialized techniques and equipment that combat camera operators typically use.
So we focus a lot on the training, right? We say training, and that's both like the types of training we do and equipment that we use. We have to take this combat cameraman and put them on a level that they can attach to a special operations or a ranger battalion, or, you know, somebody who's at a higher level. We want that combat cameraman to be able to seamlessly attach to them and be using quality or similar equipment that goes with like rifles and weapons systems training, and even specialized training. Like we in the Army, we send them to airborne, air assault, combatives is another one that we want to have our combat cameraman at that level, so that when they attach to that unit, there's no differentiation between that soldier.
And to go along with that, the equipment that they use as well, the DOD loves to do operations at night.
Oh, yeah, night vision.
So night vision, that's one that we hit on. Night vision, low light operations, that's a big thing that the military does. But it could depend on where you're located. You could have a unit that does more production stuff. So, okay, now we have a slider for our video cameras. You know, we got boom mics or whatever it may be. On the Mew, because we did amphibious operations, I got us all Dyka packs. It was just an all-weather pack that was good up until about, I think, 10 or 15 feet underwater, which was more than enough for what we do, and we really just needed to keep the water off our cameras. But we have to train with that, though. Right. You can't just necessarily give it to them and say, hey, here you go, go forth and do great things.
Yeah.
We got to give them some of that training. So we try, at least with the night vision and the camera DSLR camera systems here at Dimfos, we try and train to that stuff. The rest of it, though, that's going to be when they get to their unit.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, going to that same point, at First Combat Camera, we focus not only on the visual proficiency training, you know, of course, being an expert with their cameras, but also combat training. So being able to be proficient with their weapon, being able to do close quarters combat and our things like that, again, so they can maintain that operational effectiveness and ultimately keep up with the unit they're attached to.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, I mentioned that only to say that obviously there's no job that's without risk, right? And there's obviously inherent risk within any job, but combat camera specifically, they're putting themselves out there in, you know, pretty dangerous situations. So can you talk to me about the balance from the need to capturing compelling imagery with obviously doing their job and keeping in mind operational security as well as any sort of risk that may come from combat situations?
Yeah, so it's a line, right? And it's hard to determine specifically for each person where that line is. We teach a lot about, you know, not getting lost behind the lens. So not focusing so much into the camera that you forget where you're at, like you're in a combat situation. So you want to capture compelling imagery. You want to be, you know, in front of the unit and taking that imagery that people want to see. But you got to also realize that you're a soldier, you're a Marine first, and you may be putting yourself in harm's way. So we focus a lot on safety and what kind of things that you should be aware of when you're documenting.
Definitely. That's even one of our first classes in the course is
okay.
Class all about safety, because to echo what both of you had said is, being active duty is inherently dangerous.
Right.
It just is. Doesn't matter what your job is. And then when you find yourself behind the camera trying to get imagery of whatever is going on, it's even more dangerous. So we try to impress upon them the importance of, hey, you need to make sure, like extra sure, that you are being safe in what you're doing. And then that line that Sergeant First Class Probes was talking about, when, you know, when do you pick up your weapon or, you know, put it down? I always go back to what my master sergeant said years ago, which was, you know, I can't tell you when that's going to be. But all we can do as leaders, and in this case, instructors, is we can just give them the best possible training that we can. And then it'll just, when that time comes, if it ever comes, it'll be their experience, their knowledge, and they'll hopefully be able to make, you know, the right decision for them at that time.
I'm glad that you emphasize safety so inherently within your course, because I think that's important not only in the operational environment but also in the training environment, right? Because it's very easy to get, you know, lost in the sauce, so to speak, with regard to how you document and not be focusing on all the different things that are going around you. So it's very important to focus on safety, 100%.
They get hit with a paintball in our
Oh, system. Wow. Okay, yeah, there you go.
They're not paying attention.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about some specific examples in which case, you know, the work from combat camera operators has actually significantly contributed to the mission or a specific objective?
So for me, in my experience, you know, it was eye-opening to me to see how, you know, combat cameramen work in a theater or an operational environment. So we talk about information operations. So at the top, you know, we're pushing down to individual combat camera teams, like, hey, we want photos, we want video of this, so that we can use it for certain things. So me as a combat camera team in Iraq, I remember like taking photos and videos specifically of like Iraqi forces helping out the military or Iraqi forces being in the front and leading patrols. And on a more specific note, rebuilding Iraq. So like photos of us helping them rebuild their communities, rebuild their schools and their pools and stuff like that. So that to me was highlighting that.
For me personally, it was 2005 in Iraq. It was the first Iraqi election. All VI assets in the area were basically told like, hey, you're gonna be getting imagery of the polling sites. I happened to be with 2nd Marine Aircraft Wing, so we were up in the air taking, we had photo video teams going on helicopters, and they were getting aerial imagery of the polling sites. And we had whatever team we had up, the other team was back getting slates and stuff ready. That's back when we used to do slates, getting the slates and the captions ready for that first team. And I remember coming back from my first flight, and on there on the TV was the imagery that we had just shot. Not my team specifically, but the one before us that we had helped get out. And just seeing that on there was probably the coolest thing in the world, because it's on CNN, Fox News, it's all over the place. And it's like, wow, we just did that. And now the entire world is looking at what we just did. That was probably the coolest feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen instances where the imagery from, you know, troops who worked for me actually was making its way and being espoused by the president, right? And being shown as an example of, again, what's going up there and helping them make decisions at the very highest levels. Talk to me about what the visual documentation course is all about, right? We've kind of touched around it and walked around it, but what is the visual documentation course? How long is it? How do students get into it? And, you know, again, what does it provide students? And I believe we actually have some footage from some of the operators in the course, some of the students.
Yeah, so VisDoc is a course at DINFOS that's usually taken after completion of the MCF course. So there is some legacy people that can still get into it, but we get a lot of Army and Marines that come from the MCF course that have requirement to have a follow-on of visual documentation. We do get some Navy who use it in that sense. It's not a requirement, but they come back to DINFOS for more combat camera training in the VisDoc course. And then the Air Force does their training separately, but we'd love to see Air Force, you know, in the combat camera in the VisDoc. And really it's a 22-day course, and we focus, it's the only course in DINFOS that still utilizes and goes out to the FTX site, and we go out there and put them through real world scenarios in where we're teaching them stuff like patrols and medical scenarios and SSE or a sensitive site exploitation, stuff that they're gonna see when they get to their units. And we're running them through that multiple times to get them, you know, experience in a true uncontrolled action environment.
Yes, all of what Sergeant Probst just said, in addition to, I know for the Marine Corps, it's an MOS producing course. So if you wanna be a videographer or photographer, you have to go through this course and graduate, become a 4541 or a 4571. So they need it to get their MOS. But as they're going through it, we take all these scenarios that we put them through, we're taking from real life experiences of the instructors, historical stuff, just from our experiences, things we've had to do numerous times throughout our careers. And all of it builds off it. So we start out at a baseline, just kind of getting them refamiliarized with their camera systems, because for some of them, they had to wait That's the other thing. We have a pretty decent wait time for getting students into our course, mm-hmm. and we're almost always full, max yeah. amount of students, which is great. But we're trying to make sure that they're at that baseline if they can manipulate the camera confidently, and then we start going through different scenarios, and each scenario builds off the next and off the next, with the final culminating exercise being the FTX, where we use paintball guns, and now they actually have to deal with the threat of getting shot at and getting hurt potentially. It just stings.
So is that kind of the real world and sort of scenarios that you put them through, and is that kind of leading to that capstone you mentioned?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
And are those informed by the career field, or are those informed by your own personal experiences?
So they're informed by the instructors, but we use career field experiences to determine our curriculum and help build upon those things. Like, we pull straight from the DODI mm-hmm. and regulations to produce the scenarios.
And I can tell you from the putting the course together, the design of it, having been in on those meetings, I was the USMC rep. It's based off of here are the things we want them to know, mm-hmm. And then they basically leave it up to Dinfos of how you get there is on you, but we just need to make sure that these individuals know X, Y, and Z.
So the VizDoc course is kind of like that basic training for the combat camera operator, but what kind of educational opportunities exist for follow-on education? So if a combat camera person wants to, further their skills or education, where can they go? What can they do? What resources are available to them?
Yeah, so a good place to start is always, DINFOS, right? DINFOS offers a lot of follow-on courses that people can come back and attend, IPC, intermediate motion media course, that type of thing. And that's a good place to start. Aside from that, furthering your education on your own, like premier classes, that type of thing. And I think you can talk a little bit about Syracuse. That's a good
yes.
program.
Yes, Syracuse is a great program for individuals to go to. Unfortunately, not all services are participating in it at this time. However, having gone through it, it was a phenomenal course. I know you went through it as well, sir.
Yeah, great.
It's a great course. Lots of great information, and that is the top level schooling for VI, ComCam, and/slash PA in the DoD. Highly encourage that, but obviously not everyone can go. I agree with Sergeant First Class Probes. The intermediate courses at DINFOS, IPC, DMC, IMMC are all phenomenal courses. IPASC, another great course. Then you got YouTube University.
YU.
And even college classes. Take college classes on your own time. I've had numerous individuals that I've known throughout my career that were furthering their education on the civilian side, going through college, universities, and just great information that they're getting, workshops.
Yeah, I was just
DOD,
gonna say.
Yeah, DOD workshop, just had DC
right?
shoot-off.
DC shoot-off.
Just happened.
55th has the specialist Hilda Clayton Best ComCam. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a great opportunity to go out there and showcase, your combat camera skills and compete against, different countries mm-hmm. and different branches in one competition. Yep. So
the first ComCam just hosted the Scorpion Lens yeah. recently.
Oh, wow.
Which was all about VI stuff. That was phenomenal from what I heard. One of our other instructors, Stachan Leger, was down there. He said it was a phenomenal training experience.
It is.
Yeah, all of that are available. Really, anything extra you can do is only going to help you.
Yeah.
Indeed. Awesome. That's good to hear. How do you instill a sense of both responsibility and commitment within these students in the 22 training days that you have them?
So for us, and we're fortunate enough to have a pretty good team, right? Mm-hmm. So how we pick people to be on the VizDoc team, luckily, we ended up with great, knowledgeable instructors, and we kind of put our experiences out there for the students and kind of relay the importance of what we've done and the importance that they're going to have when they're out there documenting. So we just use our own experiences to help drive that.
Yes, we do. And it is valuable that each one of us has slightly different experiences. I think that's probably one of the most valuable things, because we can sit there and talk to them about things all day long, but if we can't break it down in a way that they can relate to, through one of our experiences or something, being able to, or sometimes show them videos I know Sergeant First Class Probst has got this great video that he uses talking about sensitive site exploitation that he did when he was in Iraq. So it definitely helps the students, I think, realize that, hey, our instructors know what the heck they're talking about. So we'll listen. But we also impress upon them that, you know, this is an extremely important job. It is high demand, low density across the entire DOD. And so to do this job, you have to be able to do it well. We're a small community. Everyone knows each other pretty much, you know. So we try and impress upon them that you are going out there not just as the eyes and ears of that commander, but you also have your reputation with, you know, ComCam, VI, your service. You know, are you living up to those standards as well? Are you leaving it better for, you know, the next individuals that follow behind you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very important. Well, it's been an honor having you both here. It's been great to just kind of talk shop for a bit, as mm-hmm. always. Before we say goodbye to y'all, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just want to say, you know, I love what I do. Do what you love in your career, right? So there's no other way to put how we can do 18 years doing the same job other than, you know, we're very passionate about the career field. And being a DINFOS instructor to me is great because I get to pass that along to new combat cameramen coming into the service. So I get to share my experience and push that on. And we love seeing, you know, students come back and like what they're doing out mm-hmm. in the field in the fleet. That yeah. makes our job that much more, you know, rewarding, is to see what they're doing.
Absolutely. 100% love seeing our graduates go out there and do great things. But I think my biggest thing I want to add is I think this is just the best occupational field in the military.
Yeah.
You get to see and do everything at any different time. You know, you could be flying in an aircraft. You could be on, you know, in an AAV or a Bradley or something, or foot patrol.
Underwater.
Underwater. Next day you're back at the office working on your imagery. You just get to see and do everything. And I think that's just such a phenomenal opportunity. I know I personally would not have stayed until retirement if I was not doing this job. That's the sole reason I stayed this long. I loved it. I still love it to this day, hence why I'm an instructor here at DINFOS. But it's great. Enjoy
yeah.
it.
Yeah, we like to say you get to vacation in every other career field, but you know, you live in yours.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yours. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's our show for this month. I want to, of course, thank our guests for stopping by and sharing their knowledge and expertise. Thank you, guests. I'd also like to thank you all for taking time to watch our program. Remember, if you prefer to listen to our show rather than watch it, DINFOS Live is also a podcast, and you can find it on your podcatcher of choice. Just search for DINFOS Live. Don't forget to join us next month on May 29th at 2 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be talking all about the 60th anniversary of DINFOS. Now, before we say goodbye, I just want to take a moment on this, our third anniversary, to recognize the amazing contributions of everyone who works behind the scenes to make this show a success. So I'd like to welcome all of our crew and everybody who works on the show to come on out. So come on out, everybody. Come on out. So again, I want to thank you all for doing everything you can to make this show happen and ultimately make this show a reality. You know, we definitely couldn't have done it without your help. So, for everyone at DINFOS and the Defense Media Activity, I'm Major David J. Murphy, and we'll see you all next month. All right, everybody, here, have a cupcake. Cupcake time.